You're welcome back. Your comments, questions are welcome via our social media handles. We are streaming live on X Spaces. You can join the conversation there on YouTube, on Facebook, and of course, on myjoyonline.com. My name is Elton Broben. Now, yesterday, special voting showed signs that the 2024 general election, just a few days away, likely to be largely smooth. It also showed pockets of some issues worth addressing before elections take place in 4 days. Now, vote buying, missing names and display of votes contrary to election rules dominated most of the centers at the special voting ceremony. So we're just 4 days away from the polls. We take a look at the road ahead and fix what needs to be fixed before the D-Day. We'll hear from political parties, the Electoral Commission, civil society groups, and journalists that covered the polls. Let's start from Kuku Asante, my colleague who monitored the elections at Ayawaso West Wagon constituency here in the Greater Accra region.
Section 34 of the Representation of the People Law makes it an offence if a person offers or gives food, drinks, entertainment, or other provisions to a voter before, during, or after an election in order to influence their vote or to reward them for how they voted or chose not to vote. During Monday's special voting held in 14 regions, sharing of food by aspirants were rampant. Perhaps the most popular of these instances was the one witnessed in the Ayawaso West Wogon constituency, where the MP, Lydia Sarah Malassan, shared packs of food to persons who had queued to vote. Despite a video capturing the MP in this act, she denied in subsequent interview with some journalists of ever engaging in such conduct.
I wasn't here. I don't know if you saw me here. I've been here since I came here before 6 a.m. And I left here a few minutes ago. I don't even know what you're talking about. I am yet to find out from them what happened.
Her contender, John Dumelo, was livid about the situation.
Why are you saying food to people in the queue? Why are you doing that? Why we can't say? We can share. If they want me to share, I also share the same. But let's respect the rules of the Electoral Commission. Don't share anything to the people in the queue who have not voted yet. And you are sharing food and we don't even know what is in the thing. And you are sharing it to the people who have not voted yet. What kind of stupidity is this? Why do you think we can't do it? We can do the same and even worse. They shouldn't even try us.
In the Ayawaso Central constituency here in Accra also, both the NDC and MPP reps shared food. This time, not to voters who are lined up to vote, but to electoral officials. Here is NDC's parliamentary candidate, Abdul Rauf Tubazu.
He didn't see it, my brother. You are the one saying it. Probably I was somewhere here. I saw them eating food, but I don't know who gave them the food. Yeah. So I don't know who bear the cost or who organized it. All I can say is that I'm not involved in it. I'm not aware that we are sharing food to anybody here.
But the presiding officer at the polling center, Billings Abrokwa, was clear that instructions from the Electoral Commission was that no such items should be received from the political parties or candidates.
It is never right. So our officials, we told them, when they give you food, collect it, put it down. Because if you don't know, you take it and something happens to you, easy, and you will be in trouble. So that's the warning we gave them.
Both the NDC and MPP now want these acts to be properly investigated. Going into the general election on Saturday, there are now fears this conduct may be rampant. The special prosecutor has deployed officers across the country to monitor and investigate such conduct. Kwiku Asante for Joy News.
Right, so that's Kwiku Asante's reporter, Goku, is in the studio here with me as we walk through events of yesterday and, of course, also get to understand the observations of Kodeo, for example, because they also deployed election observers who observed the special voting that took place in 14 out of the 16 regions, because the two other regions will have theirs, as Eastern and Western will have theirs on Thursday. And it eventually ended yesterday. The highlight of what happened yesterday is the Ayawaso West Wagon matter of food sharing. What is the latest on it?
So we understand the special prosecutor is taking this matter very seriously. As we reported yesterday, some investigators, in fact, two of them, they'd come there, they took my personal phone contact and said because we had recorded certain videos of certain incidents that had occurred, they were going to investigate this and the appropriate time will reach out to us. We understand the special prosecutor, I mean, just as the statement they put out yesterday communicated, they did send out a number of specialized investigators to go to so many locations to try and get information on some of those things that happened. They are all going to file reports, and then the special prosecutor and his team are going to review those reports and then take consequential decisions. For instance, when it comes to matters of Ayawaso West Wogon, are they going to invite Madam Lydia Alhassan for her role in what some have said is an allegation of vote buying and all that? They will take that decision, and we expect that it will be taken in the coming days. Other places as well. So all these reports in totality will be collected. They are actually analyzing them as we speak, and then the appropriate decision will be taken. The Member of Parliament has been granting a few interviews to some other media houses, trying to explain away what happened and the fact that this time around she's moved away from the fact that she wasn't there to the fact that, I mean, listen, she did not do this to induce anybody for that matter, and that she was only doing this because persons have been forming queues for hours, and so she wanted to help. And so these matters have come up, and the special prosecutor is taking it seriously. We've heard from someone like Joseph Wotal, the Commission on Human Rights and Justice, who's been condemning that. Adam Senanu also condemning that, and Kodeo itself as well.
But I'm interested. I mean, the food that was shared, the people, the targets, did they receive the food?
Yes. In fact, if you look at some of the videos we've shared, you will see the some of the persons who were lining up to go, security services persons, and then you see Lydia Alhassan and a few other persons from her office come in there and hand out the packs to them. Some of them received it. There is one particular officer in the video, perhaps from the prison service, who did not take it. You will see later on in the video that a lady goes on to try and hand it over to him, and then he says no, he wasn't interested in that. And so, but a lot of the persons who were in the queue, who were lining up to actually go and vote, actually did receive those packages that came from the Member of Parliament while they were lining up to go and vote. And so, yes, they did take that.
And then the minister and the Member of Parliament for this area is insisting that she was not involved.
Yes, in fact, early on when this matter happened, it caused a little bit of a melee at the polling station, some kind of confusion, because John DeMello and some of the supporters were not taking that line down. It caused some sort of confusion for almost 10 minutes. At that time, the Member of Parliament did leave the precincts of the polling station. I am not sure she left the place entirely because her vehicle was still parked, her driver was still around. But she left the precincts for a while for tempest to come. And then she returned nearly 30 minutes to an hour. And then as soon as we heard that she was walking in, journalists wanted to hear from her what exactly had happened. And so these journalists accosted her, if that is the right word to use, and tried to ask her some questions as to what exactly happened. At that time, she denied any involvement in fact. She then said that she hadn't been around within the time that had happened. But that was obviously not true because at the time, we had captured her on the record, standing right beside the queue, together with this person from her office, handing out these materials to these persons who were lining up to go and vote. And then consequently, like I was telling you earlier, she has moved away from that fact that she wasn't there to explain that she was not trying to induce anybody for that matter. And so that became the sticking point for the entire process, although early on there were little issues about another police officer who came to vote and then attempted to take a photo of his ballot, and then he was degenerated. He was picked up by the police. They led him to go and write his statement. He did write the statement. We have not had confirmation as to whether or not he was detained or he has been let go, granted police inquiry bail, and what consequent actions the police will be taking on that.
So for now, we don't know whether the police is taking interest in this matter or the OSP would invite her to provide further clarity on this matter.
When it comes to the police, they have not taken any additional steps from yesterday. They did not do anything. The special prosecutor that has deployed men, some of them were at these polling stations. They did interact with persons who saw what happened. They did record. They did also take phone numbers to reach out as and when they need them and then left. And we understand reports are going to be compiled. Then ultimately, the special prosecutor and his team are going to take a decision as to whether or not the specifics of what they were able to find are grounded enough to breach the Representation of the People Act that prescribes giving out items, food, drinks, entertainment, with the aim of inducing. Obviously, that would be the big question that a special prosecutor will have to grapple with. Did the Member of Parliament do that with the aim of inducing the voters to vote a certain way or not to vote a certain way? And once that decision is made, then that would mean that an offense has been committed. But if she gave that out without any attempt to induce them, then no offense has been committed. The special prosecutor would have to make a determination once he believes he can put together enough evidence to mount a prosecution in court. We expect that in the coming days, we'll get to know that from him.
Kwakwanzadi, thank you very much for coming through. And of course, that's Kwaku's report from Ayawaso West Wogo. Now, what we are picking is that the OSP is still, you know, perusing the reports that came through from their observers that they deployed to the various centers to observe the special voting. We'll bring that to you pretty shortly. We'll also be hearing from Abesori and, of course, Nana Aljima. Nana Aljima covered in the Ashanti region. Abesori for the Upper East region. I just want to hear my colleagues, and I'll bring in Rhoda because she is with Kodeo to tell us what they also observed. So, Rhoda, just bear with me for some few minutes. Let me take our viewers to the Upper East regional capital, Abesori. Abesori, so how did it go for you?
Yes, certainly. It went pretty well. Yesterday, we had very peaceful processes across the region. All the polling centers went through the special voting process without any major issue. There were reports that some of them didn't start at 7 a.m. as planned. They started a little bit late. Apart from that, there weren't any other issues. But as you know, the focus was on Boko because of the security situation there.
Yes.
A lot of people felt that it could affect the process, but it went quite satisfactorily because out of 526 special voters who were expected to pass their vote in the Boko Central constituency yesterday, 405 of them were able to go through the process and vote at the polling center, which was set up at the Boko police station. So that was the process. There weren't any issues. We heard from residents yesterday that at dawn, between dawn and 6 a.m., they had heard sounds of gunshot in the atmosphere, which the residents tell us that it has become normal in Boko Central. And so it didn't affect the turnout or the fact that people needed to come out and vote. The process went on very smoothly.
All right. Thank you very much, Abesori. He's our Upper East regional correspondent. Naya Ajima also covered some parts of the Ashanti region, and he also has an update for us as to what he found. Naya Ajima, so Ashanti region, obviously, a hotbed for political activities. Will you see that everything went on smoothly?
Yesterday, the process was largely calm in the Ashanti region, very peaceful in parts of the Ashanti region where I covered. For instance, if you go to somewhere within the Ishiatu constituency where they voted at the police depot, the situation was very calm. The election itself was very calm. There were no queues at the polling stations that I visited yesterday. The only issue that came up in the Ashanti region is that in the Ofenso North constituency, where it was expected that the election will start at 7 a.m., it's delayed because the voter register didn't arrive on time. Even though the materials, the EC had the materials on time, the register itself, which was supposed to be used for the election, didn't arrive in due time. And that delayed the process for close to 3 hours. But after the register itself came in, the process started somewhere around 11:30, where a lot or almost all of the people who were available to cast their ballots got the opportunity to do so. Unfortunately, in the Kwaraso constituency, about 3 policemen who had come to cast their ballots, unfortunately, didn't find their names in the register, so they were not allowed to exercise their franchise. But according to these officers, they submitted their details for the exercise, but unfortunately their names were not there. So they are requesting the EC to investigate and find time for them to cast their ballots before they go on their official assignments on the on Saturday, which is supposed to be the election day. But so far, the Ashanti region yesterday was very calm. Just that the NDC yesterday raised some concerns after the election. According to the National Democratic Congress, the BVD machine for the Kwadaso constituency after the election, the BVD machines were rather taken to the office of the Electoral Commission instead of the machines being kept with the materials and the ballot papers at the police armory.
Right.
They are claiming that, or they are pointing accusing fingers at the EC of keeping the machine in the office of the EC, and they believe that it could be tampered with. We are making efforts to get the EC to answer these questions that are being raised by the National Democratic Congress, but so far we have not been successful. But aside from that, the election yesterday was very calm and peaceful in the Ashanti region.
Well, what about the issue of sharing of food and other things that the EC consider could be means of inducing voters? Did you come across any in any of your rounds?
Among the areas that I visited, that issue did not come up in any of the polling stations. I didn't see any candidates or any party sharing food or any items to these electorates who had come to cast their ballots.
Right. Daniel Ojima, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I guess we're warming up for Saturday, because what happened yesterday was a dress rehearsal. And of course, who will be there on your election headquarters? All right. So, I mean, you've heard from some of our reporters. We have reporters in all the 276 constituencies, plus other places of interest, reporters embedded with the presidential candidates, former presidents, the Electoral Commission. That is how comprehensively we'll cover the election for you on Saturday. Let me bring in Cordeo. So, Cordeo observation during the special voting and learnings for the main election on Saturday. Rhoda Osei Afo is with the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers, and she joins me via Zoom. So, Rhoda, thank you very much for your patience. You've heard our reports. I'm sure you've done your own independent, you know, observation. You did your own independent observation of the special voting. What did you observe?
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to your viewers. So, as you indicated, Kodua has been observing the entire pre-election environment, and so yesterday, observers were also deployed to the various constituencies where the special voting exercise took place. We had over 200 observers in these places. So at least we covered about 200 constituencies, which is quite a lot. Now, generally, I would want to speak first to what are general impressions about the exercise. And I think I have to point out that it's based on the data that we have, the exercise generally proceeded quite smoothly. We didn't record many incidents or challenges. We've been observing special voting exercises in the previous elections. It looks like some improvements have been made this year. If you are looking at some of the issues we've had in the past about people's names missing on the register and all of that, this is not to say that we haven't had these kinds of incidents this year, but in terms of skill, I think there's been some significant improvement. We had just about a couple of observers reporting about some security officials or some persons not being able to vote because their names were not on the list. And we've had reports about why some of those people couldn't find their names on the list because of certain actions that were not taken at some point in time in the process of the compilation of the process. Beyond that, we just had, I think, another issue with ballot paper, something to do with the serial number of the ballot paper, which sort of brought about some misunderstanding. But all of those issues really didn't seem to be to have any significant impact on the overall conduct of the polls. Now, talking specifically about, say, opening of polls, generally we're able to do well for the places our observers were in almost 99% of polling stations. By 7:15, they were able to go through voting. They had all the materials that were available, and this is good for us to be seeing some of these things. We are hoping that the Electoral Commission will be able to do same when we go to the polls on Saturday. This is going to be a massive exercise. mind you, as we are talking about the special voting, this is basically just about one polling station per constituency, so it should be far easier to mobilize and to organize and facilitate and all of that. So we are still hoping that things will proceed smoothly. Now, talking specifically about some of the incidents that have come up in the media, I think from our end, we've also picked up a few incidents about photographing of ballots, which really is quite unfortunate because it then undermines the secrecy of the ballot. And there are several reasons why some of these things are legally not allowed, because we are looking at having a very free, fair, and credible process. You don't want voters being compromised. You don't want them being induced materially. You don't want their ballots being compromised in terms of secrecy. So the Election Commission goes through a lot to make sure that the modalities are there. And so when you see voters themselves giving out their ballots away, we, as I said, we've had reports from a number of constituencies, about 7, 6 or so, which we verified, where people reportedly took photographs of their ballots after they had cast. And in one instance, I think the police picked that issue up. We understand that some people are currently in the custody of police on this issue.
Maroda, before you go on, let's stay a little longer on this, you know, people taking pictures of their ballots and then showing it openly, even though we cannot put a face to the pictures that we are seeing on social media. The constitution of the specialized voters, these are either they are security members of the security agencies or they are officials of the Electoral Commission or media personnel. So these are people who you know, are presumed to know better. Now, these are people who also be playing active roles on Saturday, and yet they are violating the law in this way.
Exactly the problem, right? If we are seeing these kinds of development, and I was going to look at some of the other related issues like vote buying, people being given monies in a couple of constituencies where we had some reports to this effect. This is really worrying, right? That the people that you expect, and I want to emphasize that in some of the reported cases that we have, security personnel, police officers were involved taking pictures of their ballots. This is really unfortunate because these are the people that you expect to enforce the law, that if anybody, even out of ignorance, do same, they will be able to sort of take action on that.
And the issue you raise about people taking money, is it in reference to yesterday's special voting?
So, them involved in this. Yes, this is really specifically the special voting yesterday.
Which specific areas?
Can you hear me now?
So I asked earlier about the monetary inducement that you raised, and I asked whether it happened in yesterday's special voting. Which particular area did you notice this?
We had a couple of incidents, one in Greater Accra. These are incidents that we are verified. This evening, Kodio will be issuing a statement, and so I'll plead with you, all the details will be provided so that the public is duly informed about all these details. But yes, we've had, as I said, a couple of incidents where people are standing around the polling areas and giving out monies to some individuals, which really is quite unacceptable.
This is very serious. I mean, because of the caliber of people involved in the special voting.
Precisely.
And then the star of the day yesterday, obviously, even though yet to be verified, happens to be the Member of Parliament for Ayawaso of West Wagon, Lydia Al-Hassan. The accusation against her is that she distributed food to people who were in the queue going through the voting process. The OSP has taken an interest in this matter. Shraj has condemned it. The MP says that it wasn't me. First of all, what is your reaction to what played out at Dayawas West Wagon constituency yesterday?
All right, thank you for that. So as I said, we are not only limited, we don't only speak to some of the things that our observers pick up from the field, but we also monitor the media space to see what issues are coming through. And indeed, as we saw in the videos, if this is really the case, that is also very, very unfortunate. This is an issue that we cannot condone in our fledgling democracy, because it undermines the credibility of the ballot or of the voting process. The good thing probably is that it has not been widespread. But again, it doesn't mean that the significance is not there. So yes, this is something that really it's very worrying, and we are calling on the security agencies to take this matter up. And the earlier we hear something about it, the better, because we are going on the, Saturday, we are going to have millions of people going to vote. So the lessons from this exercise will be very important for all of us to learn from. If there's nothing coming out of this, basically, indirectly, we are saying that probably this is not a big deal, that probably people could just go on and indulge in these things at the many polling stations across the country where voting is going to take place. So the earlier we hear something from the police service, the better it will be for all of us.
So Rhoda, what do you expect should happen going forward? Because on Saturday, we are likely to see this picture play out again, especially when party agents may go to the polling centers and they may want to give food or items to their polling agents. And they will end up extending same courtesy to the people who are there to cast their vote. How should this be managed on election day?
Yes, I mean, I've heard people say that when they come around and they give food, you take it, but don't vote. No, I don't think that's the right education that we want people to be receiving, right? This is unacceptable, and we must reject that. And so it's important for the Electoral Commission, the NCC, for all of them to step up voter education. Let people know that this is something that is not allowed under our electoral laws, and that by indulging in that, you are violating the laws. And that apart from that, the police service is also updating us on what steps they would have taken by then. We still have a few days to go. I think if we really want to do something, we still have some good enough days to be able to at least send some signal out there to the public that this is something that we cannot tolerate. So again, the point I made earlier, the earlier we hear something from all these agencies, the Electoral Commission, I think I've heard a statement from the Electoral Commission. The police service should be able to also come out and address some of these issues. And then we know that at least going into December 7th, these are issues that the public can expect not to happen because they are not acceptable.
Finally, before you go, we've got what, 2 days or maximum 3 days before Saturday's elections. Will you say that the Electoral Commission is up to the task? I mean, the last few days, we've witnessed errors, recalling of ballots. This afternoon, for example, they burnt 3.6 million ballots for both the presidential and parliamentary in the eastern region. Ballots for some part of the eastern and the western region. In view of what has happened so far in the last few days, will you still say that the EC is ready to conduct a credible, free, fair, and transparent elections?
Well, I mean, this is a commission that has been learning a lot of lessons over the past several years. We've been seeing improvements over the last several years. But quite interestingly, new challenges emerge. So even as we made some improvements in the previous elections in some areas, like the processing of voters so that voting took place smoothly, especially in 2016 and in 2020, now we are seeing new challenges, issues to do with errors about the printing and publication of materials. We are hoping that at least so far they've been able to identify some of these and to put in place measures to address them. We are hoping that they will be on their guard, that they will be able to detect any issues before December 7th. And even in the instances where anything is untoward occurs, they will be transparent with the public, whether genuine challenges. They'll be able to communicate these challenges to the public. They'll be able to indicate what they are doing about this. I think what we don't want to hear or want to see is some attempts to cover up anything, okay? When you do that, then you give yourself away in terms of public trust. So as much as possible, we are looking for a very smooth process. But given that this is going to be manned by humans, some challenges may occur. But again, like I said, it is important for the Electoral Commission to be transparent with the public, to acknowledge their challenges, and to take steps to address all these challenges.
Rhoda, thank you so much. And we are waiting for that official statement from Kodeyo on the special voting. You say later this evening?
Yes.
All right. Rhoda Oseyafo is with the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers. And of course, also in the studio with me is someone who potentially will be sworn in as President of the Republic on January 7, 2025. Kofi Apalu. Kofi, you're welcome to The Pulse. Before I settle to deal with you on this matter, let me quickly bring in the perspective of anti-corruption campaigner Vitus Azim. Mr. Azim, good afternoon. Welcome to the poll. So you observed the polls yesterday. Highlight of it is what we are discussing. The sharing of food and in some cases, according to Cordeo, money to people who are either police officers, military officers, prison officers, immigration officers, media, electoral commission officers. And according to Cordeo, it was quite rampant in the greater Accra region and some parts of the country, plus the food sharing matter. What is your, what do you make of what is happening?
Well, I think what we are running in this country is not democracy. It's moneycracy. And people do it with impunity. I think it's a disgrace to us as a country that claims to be democratic. It's very sad that even on election day, people can go to the polling stations and dish out money and food to people queuing up to vote. No fear, no shame. The impunity in this country is becoming too much.
And these are people you would say that they should know better. And for that reason, even when that courtesy is extended to them, they should be able to say, no, this is not how it's supposed to be done. The law says this and that. And you have no business bringing this to the polling center. Yes, they took it with open arms.
Yes, initially when I saw it, I wanted to say that that's how they should have behaved. But you know, politicians are also vindictive. If...
Hello, Ms. Azim? Yes, the connection to him is quite not right. We'll see if we can establish a better connection to Mr. Vitus Azim, anti-corruption campaigner, to tell us what he make of the, first of all, his overall observation of the just-ended special voting as we look forward to Saturday's presidential and parliamentary elections across the country. 18 million Ghanaians will be voting to elect a president and 276 members of parliament. Kofi Apalu is one of those who will be seeking your mandate to lead this country in 2025, and he joins me here in the studio. Mr. Apalu, you're welcome.
Thank you, Ertin.
So first, your sum up of the special voting.
Oh, I would say we did well as a country by what the way we conducted ourselves yesterday. At least, I would say I'll give a thumbs up to the Electoral Commission for the job that they did yesterday. And also some of our people who went there to vote. And they conducted themselves very, very well with little incidents like the one you are talking about.
Right.
I mean, it has become an acceptable norm in this country that when you give money to people to vote for you, you know, it's an open secret.
Right.
Everybody is aware.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we pretend as if nothing of that sort is not, it's not happening. We were all here when the former president gave everybody 40 cities, 400,000 people.
As transportation.
As transportation. And nobody. I didn't hear those people commenting today, condemning it. You see? So when it became acceptable at that time, you know, it means that everybody will do the same. So we should try as much as possible to condemn everybody
mm-hmm.
who does anything of that sort. Even if the person has done it long ago, we should still condemn it, you know? I was at Asenov when Dwaboso, is Dwaboso or Bodi, nothing Bodi.
Dwaboso no, is Bodi, in the
Bodi.
Western North.
Western North, Bodi MP.
That would be Sam Samsonahi?
Yeah.
Also in the Western
North. Yeah, well, on your sister TV, station, Adum, Adum TV. And boldly, he was saying that he goes run in the morning and then he gives money to people. I mean, I was like, look at him. Why should you be sitting here saying this, you know? And I didn't have any support, you know, but it's not something new.
Okay.
It's something that MPP and NDC does, both of them. So who is going to fight them?
So Mr. Palu, usually politicians, when you give money and food. For example, you go to a polling center, you give food to people who are voting and also electoral officers. Is the intention really to influence them?
Yes.
Or to appreciate the work they are doing?
You know, you see, the Bible says that the giver is always Lord over the receiver. Is that not it?
Right.
So the moment he gives you that money or gives you that food, automatically your attitude, your everything will change. You cannot do anything. You understand? So if we are condemning what happened yesterday, let's go back and let's say, hey, guys, we shouldn't condone this. Let's stop it. Even look at the people who are receiving it. Security officers.
Right.
Who's supposed to do the arrest? We're even collecting it. So what will happen? Mm. And nothing will happen. So it's unfortunate that the OSP said he's going. Who is he going after? Who is he going after? Who is he going to arrest? He can arrest MPP, he can arrest NDC. So he should stop. Okay? Let's all condemn it. That is why the other time at the Peace Council thing, I was condemning the actions of the Peace Council. I said, we shouldn't practice this or encourage this dual politics.
You know, we should. The duopoly.
We should avoid that duopoly. Let's do multi party democracy here. Because if we have two or four, or let's say three or more strong political parties, nobody can misbehave.
Right.
But because now it's two, if this guy misbehaves and you get him arrested, the next day his supporters and everything will
mass up and we demand the person's release.
Yes. You see, so, but it's unfortunate that some of the police and this one that you just showed, I didn't see the police. I saw the prison officers.
Right.
You know, the prison officers, they are suffering. You know, they are suffering. They are, you know, you find difficult to get money.
But the pack of rice can also solve your problems.
No, but that instant.
You need it.
Yeah, that's it. They need it.
All right. Mr. Paulo, we also want to talk about the Electoral Commission, your campaign, and Saturday. But something that I have observed about you for some time now.
Yeah.
I mean, you filed your nominations. The EC cleared you. You went through balloting. Now you are on the ballot paper,
exactly,
contesting to become president of the republic. In terms of what I've observed, nothing has changed. Now you still drove to our office alone,
yeah,
without any entourage, without any security people around you. Why is it so?
Oh yeah, because of where I was brought up. You know, especially in Europe, when you are campaigning, you do everything yourself.
But I think that you potentially could become the next president of the republic.
Oh.
I remember back then, I don't know whether it's an arrangement of the security agency, they deploy security personnel to provide security.
I have two policemen.
Because of that, you are standing for the presidential race.
Yeah, I have two policemen, but hardly do I use them, you know. It's not all the time that I use them, sometimes. Depend on the situation at hand, but I'm not afraid of anything. Honestly, okay. I don't detain the fear, and I'm not afraid. I'm not scared of anybody's. If you kill me, that's all. You end it, okay. And then the next day, will you get me to kill? You can't get me to kill again.
Now let me bring in Mr. Vitus Azim. I think we've managed to establish a very credible line to him. Let me wrap up with him on this special voting. So, Mr. Azim, you were making a point that this is unfortunate, but the question is, this is probably just a warm-up to what is to come on Saturday. How do we deal with this? We've lost him, so we'll leave him to rest.
Yeah.
Once I deal with Mr. Kofi Apali. So, how's the campaign going?
Oh, the campaign is going very well.
Why are you in Accra?
Accra is part of the campaign.
It so, is, but you've been in Accra more than you've been in the other regions.
Yeah, because other people are working there for us.
You should be there. It's your face they want to see. It's your face that is on the ballot.
Yeah, you are right, but you cannot be everywhere. Yeah, so we are trying our best because we are running on a limited resources. So we try to apply our resources very, very well. So, but this election, we'll win the election.
Why do you say so? What makes you so confident?
I'm 100% confident that I'm going to win the election. Because of what God has told me. I'm not going to win this election by my own strength, but I believe that it's going to be by the Spirit of God.
Not because of some prophets.
Oh, no, forget about the prophets. The prophets, they are lying to the people. You know, they have not seen anything. They are just lying to the people. You know, Saturday is not far. I will win the elections. Mm. And then you call me back and say, Mr. Paulo, you said it. I will win this election. Mm. This election is done deal.
The Electoral Commission have been on this for some time now. Yeah. Now, in the run up to this, we've got a few days, yet the errors keep coming.
Oh, this time you can't blame the EC. The EC, we have to applaud the EC for their diligence. You know, they have been more diligent in this process because all those that we call mistakes or errors that they identify. It's the EC that are identifying those errors. You see, they see them and then they draw our attention and say, guys, we can't entertain this. Let's discard it. And then, so we have to applaud the Electoral Commission. They are doing a very good job. All those mistakes that they saw at Brekum.
Part of the voter region, issue of civilization and the rest.
If all the political parties will admit, the EC spotted them. And then they drew our attention.
And not that it was the other way around.
No. It was because the EC is not the printer.
Okay.
They are the printing houses. They are doing the job. So when they submit the job to the EC will go through and then they identify the mistakes and then they
and then get them to do it. Let me try Mr. Vice Azim for the very last time. Mr. Azim, we apologize for the inconsistencies in the connection to you. But we're making a point about what happened yesterday. My question really is, whatever happened on yesterday obviously serves as a platform of what is to come on Saturday. How do we deal with it when the people who are supposed to ensure that the laws governing the elections are respected are the ones who are also being compromised here?
You see, we are in a very unfortunate situation because politicians can also be very vindictive. So, and there's uncertainty about whoever is going to become the next president and the ruling party. So even those who are supposed to ensure that everything goes on smoothly may be afraid or even vulnerable in insisting on the right thing. In addition, we've seen that the laws of this land are no longer that effective. So even if you arrest people and send them to court, they can be released the following day. So I really just don't know how we can do it except public education to the people not to receive these token gifts just to influence their voting. And where you are really in need and you cannot refuse, you can take it, but vote according to your conscience. Vote for the party of your choice, irrespective of whoever gave you money or food. I know some people are against that, but some people are such so vulnerable that if you haven't seen 100 cities for the past 1 month and somebody comes to put a 100 city note in your hand, the temptation is very high for you to accept. So if you are compelled to accept, at least still live by your conscience.
Right. The other concern for me here, though, is the interest that the OSP has taken in this matter. The person in question is a certain member of parliament for the IOS West Wagon constituency and also the serving minister for water resources and sanitation. Now, it's almost 24 hours. Beyond the OSP saying that they've interviewed people, we are here to hear the OSP say that we've invited her or possibly arrest her. Some are suggesting that, I mean, with just a few days to election, it will be suicidal for the OSP to undertake such a venture because that will give political advantage to the person's opponents. How should this be handled?
Well, you see, I think that the OSP's hands might be tied in a way. As for giving political advantage, you know that it was wrong and you started to do it. So if a parliamentary candidate takes a gun today and goes to shoot somebody, should he not be arrested because it will be to the advantage of his or her opponent? That, I don't go with it. But I'm just afraid that the OSP may not be able to do what they have said in word. They cannot support, they are not like to support their action, their words with action. That's my only problem. What they probably can do is wait until after the elections and then they proceed with investigations and possible prosecution of the people. But that will not have an effect on the results of the election. So as for now, it's too late for them to be able to do much about this vote by, from my perspective.
But some are even raising the issue about, I mean, the involvement of the OSP in the first place, where in time past, they even declared some people wanted. Nothing has happened to it. People involved in similar violation of the electoral rules. It's like you only come to show power, but beyond showing of that authority, you don't act on it.
Yeah, it's just like a wild goose case. You know there was a particular nominee for RCC who was being tried in the court. And just before he could descend or judge up to give it, the judge has been transferred.
Right.
So it means that all the effort of the Office of Special Prosecutor has come to naught. And so when you have even state institutions not collaborating with the OSP, you cannot expect money to come from the OSP. And that's the problem. Some were saying, oh, the uniformed people shouldn't have taken the food like that. Mm. But you see, again, some of them were either afraid of the consequences if they openly refused, or they were too hungry and felt that why not take it? Is the money for which they have used to prepare the food is not theirs. Mm. It's probably from the public purse. But they forgot to look at the implications of their action. Because one day, one parcel of food, you have damaged your image. We could see their faces. We know who they were. They were wearing uniform. And that was an unfortunate thing that they did. Not only today as individuals, but even to the institution that they represent. Okay. Because on Saturday, they are going to be the very people monitoring the elections.
Right. Ms. Azim, before I let you go, and I'm guessing that you will vote on Saturday.
I will.
I'm asking whether you are voting on Saturday.
Unfortunately, I couldn't transfer my vote, and I'm far away in the north.
And so you are out?
Somehow.
All right.
I'm 1,000 kilometers from my polling station.
All right. Thank you so much. Mr. Vitus Azim is an anti-corruption campaigner. That's one vote lost.
Yeah, I've lost one vote because I know Vitus was going to vote for me. And now he says he can't come to Accra to vote.
No, he's in Accra, but he can't go to his village to vote.
It's very painful. Very, very painful.
Mr. Palo, I've known you for so long. I mean, me and you, we've had a relationship in Kumasi. Your days at where you wanted to even contest the Menchia South constituency.
Not Menchia.
Menchia constituency.
Yeah, that time it was Menchia.
Dr. Adokofo was about to exit parliament. You wanted to. And then, in this election, for example, almost all the political parties, they've concentrated the campaign in the Ashanti region because of the volume of votes there. But I haven't seen much of you in the region.
Yes, you are right. I've not done much in the Ashanti region, but I've done a lot in the Volta region and the Oti region. And I'm doing a lot here in Accra because that's where the votes are.
Mm.
So, by Ashanti region, the votes will come to me.
But the polls I've seen, you don't feature much.
Oh, yeah, it's actually, I don't rely on those polls. Yeah, they are not scientific. They are not scientific polls. I don't trust them. You know, you can see some of them. They are, the way they started, they've not ended. They have been the same trend, you know. Mm. So I don't want to rely on them. Because one of them, he included this gentleman, Dr. Samankra.
Mm.
That is, he was going to be number four.
Yet the man was disqualified.
Yes. So how did he arrive at that? He couldn't even fill his form. So I don't rely on those.
Mm.
I don't know even, apart from you, because you're a media guy, that you may know Samankra. I don't know anybody who knows Samankra, but he featured in some of the polls, so I don't trust them. Saturday will give us the best polls.
Right.
Yeah, because I can tell you confidently that I have some 5 seats that are coming to LPG. I'm winning 5 seats.
5 parliamentary seats.
Exactly. I'm winning those 5 seats. So at least for the first time, LPG will be in.
We'll have representation in parliament.
Yeah. So this election is not going to be a walkover. LPG is seriously in it. Even GUM is also in it. Mm. But none of their posts has featured GUM.
But he came third in the last election.
And this time, the same strategy he adopted. He's using the same strategy. And it's working for him. It's unfortunate PNC couldn't, and the PPP couldn't appear on the ballot. But it's going to be different.
But financially, how draining has it been?
Oh, I've spent a lot. But it's normal.
Mm.
It's normal because I know what I'm doing and I know where I'm going. So spending that money Actually, money, what is money meant for? You have to use them. If you don't use the money, you can't put them in the bus. If you put them in the bus, what is the use of it? I'm actually, they will tell you, Sika, or say the Kamumu, or something like that. You have to use the money so that everybody knows that you are spending. Actually, I'm not scared about what is going on. I know with certainty that I win this election.
Finally, look into my camera and speak to Ghanaians as we wrap up on this interview.
Oh, this election, actually, you have given me, you have given me 5 minutes to talk about this, that when I become president, we are going to make university education free. So every child will go to university. We'll make sure the free SHS will continue, but those who are going to senior high school, we'll give them back to school allowance of 2,000 cedis to enable them to buy their trunk and chawasis to go to school. We are also introducing unemployment benefit of 700 cedis. Anybody who is not working will receive
every month.
Every month, 700 cedis. And then those who are below 18 years, I'm talking about the children, they will receive a monthly allowance of 500 cedis.
Child support?
Yes, every child, 500 cedis. Because we want to stimulate our economy to inject more money in the system, to stimulate the economy, to generate demand activities. So that whatever you produce and sell, people have money to buy. And then we are also setting up a $10 billion job fund to assist the young people to start their own businesses. Anybody with a fantastic vision, count on us. We'll give you money in the form of a loan. If you need, let's say, $5 million, $1 million, $500,000, just take it and start that business. And finally, we are also going to put a ban on importation of rice and poultry. We want to support our own people to produce them in large volumes to meet the demand.
All right. Mr. Kofi Apalu
is... But I'm number five.
Right.
Number five on the ballot. And the symbol is star, LPG.
We'll talk hopefully on Sunday morning.
No, Monday. Because Sunday, I'll be in church.
All right. Kofi Apalu is a presidential candidate of the LPG. And of course, the election is this Saturday. Now, the NDC Council of Elders addressed a news conference this afternoon with Chairman Alhaji Bahama Idris, calling on the Electoral Commission to demonstrate greater competence and accountability.
And wherever possible, put them on record. We also urge the media to stay alert and assist the Election Security Task Force in implementing its plans for peaceful elections. We urge the Electoral Commission to set its act together if they are to ensure free, fair, and credible elections. It isn't easy for the public to accept. It isn't easy for the public to accept its assurance for robust and frequent and transparent elections when day in and day out you hear and read of stories suggesting poor management on this part, the latest being the last minute decision to reprint ballot papers for special voting in the western and eastern regions of Ghana. The mantra of the EC is that elections are won at the polling stations. While that is true, the EC must ensure the accuracy of the figures it totals and avoid what happened in the 2020 elections when percentages kept changing. The Council applauds the diligent work done by the party leadership in safeguarding the interests of the party and Ghanaian voters. Dealing with an electoral commission packed with known NPP stalwarts is daunting. We urge our team to continue to exercise vigilance as we approach the DD. We reassure party membership that all information received from them across the country is being taken seriously because we are taking no chances. We remind all polling agents representing the party at the polling stations on December 7 to demonstrate loyalty and commitment. We appreciate the time they have spent on training and preparation. They should feel proud of being part of the historic movement in our to oust this government that has inflicted such pain and hardship on Ghanaians. Their assignment as polling agents is a call to national duty to secure the future.
Right, so this is a pause here on Joy News. We'll take a short break when we return. We'll speak to more of the political parties ahead of the Saturday's general elections across the country. With the New Force economist joining me here in the studio. Welcome back. This is a pause here on Joy News. I'm interested in knowing what the factors that may influence who you're going to vote for on Saturday, either the presidential or the parliamentary. Now, we'll also stay on your election headquarters because the campaigns are winding down. We're on a home stretch and everything will come to an end Thursday midnight as the days get closer. Mr. Mahama is in the Ashanti region and will be wrapping up soon ahead of Thursdays when the parties wrap up their campaigns with rallies in Accra on Thursday. All touch base with various campaigns shortly. But now, let me interact with Hubert Beidou, lead economist with the New Force, and he is in the studio. So, Hubert, the Force, you monitor the special voting?
We've monitored everything from the beginning.
So, your impressions of what happened yesterday?
It is largely satisfactory. A few issues here and there, but if you are handling millions of people, these are very much expected. So it's largely satisfactory.
But generally, the conduct of the EC in the run-up to Saturday, are you happy with the way they've conducted themselves in terms of, you know, living up to expectation, the processes?
Well, if you have an institution that is largely understaffed and they become functional once every 4 years, these are some of the things you expect, and it's one of the things that we've been preaching, that institutions have to be independent, they have to be well-funded, and then they have to be well-protected by the laws of the country. And so we are not surprised. We just see that it's a consequence of bad leadership.
So you're going into election with a trust conviction. As far as the EC is concerned, the NDC said they don't trust the EC. They are going to election with the EC that they don't trust. I don't know what your position is.
Well, whether you trust the institution or not, that's what you have. The EC is the final arbiter in this matter. And so, you know, you do what you have to do as a candidate, and you trust the people of Ghana that they will be more concerned about the future of the country and the generations yet unborn. And then when they give you a resounding victory, there's nothing anybody can do.
All right. On the economy, I know the New Force, you have your own plans. You have pillars that you want to work around it, implement to for the betterment of the country. Now, the IMF concluded its review of Ghana, and they plan to release another $360 million to the economy. They say that the economy, they are happy with the way the economy has been managed in the midst of the crisis. The finance minister today also announced the end of the debt exchange program, meaning that we are back, we are getting back on our feet. Happy with the way things are?
Well, if you are a serious country, you don't depend on the IMF to tell you where the country is going. And you are not concerned about whether or not they are happy about the economy. Because tell you what, the IMF is a bank. And not just a bank, it's a lobbyist. It's a lobbyist for big banks like BlackRock, JP Morgan, Blackstone. And they are interested in giving you loans that you cannot pay back because you're a country with large assets. You're a country with trillions of dollars in gold reserves, you know, sitting under the ground. And so you don't really want to depend on the opinions and the recommendations of the IMF. You have to build your own IMF. You have to generate income yourself. And you fail to do that, and which we failed 17 times because we've been there 17 times. It tells you that you have a bad leadership, and that's what you have to fix, not what IMF is saying about your country.
So what really is the plan that the new force is proposing? I mean, since I became enlightened, every budget, and indeed every presidential campaign, you hear the slogan, "All will come, we'll transfer, we'll transform the structure of our economy, we'll move it from a raw material base to value-added economy and all that." Yes, we are still in the same position. No serious movement to give meaning to all those slogans and campaign promises to transform our economy. What is the plan as far as the new force is concerned?
I'm glad you use the word plan. I appreciate that many candidates and political parties have used the word value addition,
yeah,
and moving the economy from importation to exportation. But I've never seen any political party give us a plan. A plan that links from one to the other and how they are going to fund the plan and telling Ghanaians the intent and the motive of the plan. We have not just given Ghanaians a manifesto. We have given Ghanaians a document that will benefit the nation in the next decade and centuries to come. Okay. It doesn't really matter if Nana Kwame Bediako becomes president or not. He's given Ghanaians a gift, and we have to be very thankful of what he's done.
Meaning that even if he doesn't win, the blueprint is there.
The blueprint is there. It's out there.
And then implement it.
Exactly. Mm. We've shown Ghanaians the way. And it's time for Ghanaians to decide whether they want to stay in this situation or they want to move on onto greatness.
What should be the first step as far as you are concerned?
Well, we have said that you first need to focus on what I call economic federalism. And what that means is that you have to activate, in the words of Nana Kwame Bediako, you have to activate every region, not just Greater Accra or Accra. So when you have all the 16 regions standing on their feet, then you can have a proper consolidated economy. And you can have people staying in their regions and in their towns working because now they don't have to migrate to Accra to fend for themselves. I think that's the fundamental thing, the basic thing that any leader should be thinking of for the situation of Ghana now.
Because currently decentralization appears to really exist in books. That's why everybody is running to Accra.
Right.
Because opportunities in the regions are very limited. If
absolutely.
You take Accra and maybe Kumasi out, the rest of the regions are struggling.
Absolutely.
But if you need a passport today, you may have to come to Accra to take
there
your biometrics and all those things. Apart from a few other regions that have some of these stations. Deliberately, we've staffed the other regions of development by our own doing. And you say that this can change with just a plan?
Well, it's not just a plan. You first need to have the knowledge about the problem. And that's what we are telling you, that you need that economic federalism. And we are saying that you also have to have pluralistic institutions. And what I mean by that is you have to have, like you mentioned, the passport office. You have to have these institutions scattered all around the country. And these institutions have to be independent, and they have to have self-correcting mechanisms that are respected by the nation and the laws of the country. The best we can do is to tell you what to do because we don't have the power yet. And the best Ghanaians can also do is to trust the words of Nana Kwame Bediako and to look at his track record as an individual in his private life, what he has been able to achieve for himself. If you look at the 12 candidates, I would say that he's the only one who is well invested in Ghana.
Right.
He's invested more than $100 million in this country.
Right.
His entire nuclear family living in this country. So you can never have a better bet than an Kwame Bediako.
And then also, I mean, perhaps he's also been to every constituency in the country.
Definitely. You know, if you have the opportunity to travel across the length and breadth of this country, you will appreciate that we live in a very poor country that is culturally engineered to be dishonest. And this is as a consequence of bad leadership. And we see some of the effects on TV, like you were discussing,
right.
Monocracy,
right.
Vote buying, and, you know, it's a result of bad leadership, leading into poverty, leading into people not having access to capital. And then they are at the mercy of politicians every 4 years or whenever there is a by-election. So this is the country that...
And in terms of the message that you've been giving them, we've got some few days to go. Will you say that it is getting down to their core?
I would say we've run a very successful campaign. I am shocked, if that's the best word, by the response we've gotten from Ghanaians. In fact, we've been to constituencies and towns like Kachi South, Komenda, you know, many other places where people have used their own funds to organize rallies, like we saw in Drobo in German South constituency. We met over 5,000 people who waited for us for 8 hours. For 8 hours.
Just to listen to
Nana Kwame Bediako. And Nana got on the stage at around 9:30 p.m. and he left at 11 p.m. and they were still there. So we are overwhelmed by what we have seen, and we hope that will translate into the numbers come 7 December.
So for somebody who is watching and still undecided, what message do you have for such person?
Well, you have seen the leadership of the Diopoli in the last 32 to 40 years. And for the first time, you have an alternative, because I would excuse Ghanaians that they've never really had an alternative. They've never had an individual who is serious about changing this country, who is willing to spend his own money on campaign, who is not just giving promises here and there, but means what he says and can refer to track records. And so you have no reason not to vote. The time is now, and you have to decide.
You think Saturday something significant will happen?
People will say we will shock Ghanaians. A
voter population that is more than half people in the UFO bracket, you will say that your candidate identifies with them more, and that should translate into votes.
You know, if we don't get more than 5 million votes, it will reveal to me a lot of things about this country. And it will reveal to us who we are as Ghanaians.
Like what, for example?
Well, if you live in a country that has so much potential, that began with the likes of Singapore and South Korea, and you can see where Singapore is today. And millions of Ghanaians have seen this on the internet, and they make a decision to still live in that same situation. That will tell us a lot. That will really tell us a lot.
Hubert, your final words before you go.
I thank you, first of all, Multimedia. I think you have done a great job by hoisting our message on your shoulders. I also thank Nana Kwame Bediako for believing in the youth of Ghana and investing so much just to change this country. And I want the Ghanaian people to understand that the time is now. This could be their last chance. go out there and vote on the 7th of December for Nana Kwame Bediakon.
And then just in 30 seconds, your expectation of the Electoral Commission and the security agents, especially the police, that will be solely responsible for election management on the day.
I expect the EC to do its work. I expect it to be a good arbiter, not to be biased, because we are sitting at a crossroad, and you know the nation, the destiny of the nation is in their hands at this moment, so they have to be really careful.
Hubert Beidou is lead economist with the New Force, and of course the election is on Saturday. Remember, is the presidential and parliamentary all in one. Saturday is the day, and Nana Kwame Bediakon is on the ballot paper as an independent candidate under the umbrella of the New Force. Now, let's move to some other stories. Now, it's often said that regular exercise is good for the body. However, not many people get to exercise even yesterday due to their busy schedule, but that is not a problem for 89-year-old Samuel Ami here, the octogenarian who defies us to stay fit every morning. Mr. Ami here has been exercising every morning and shows no sign of slowing down anytime soon. Kenneth Jesse has more in this report.
Every dawn, a familiar figure moves through the early morning haze near Newtown, a suburb of Accra. In his usual t-shirt and shorts to match, 89-year-old Samuel Ami here jogs with steady determination. To onlookers, he is an embodiment of vitality and discipline. But for Samuel, this daily ritual is far more than a commitment to fitness. It is his celebration of life itself. Samuel's love affair with exercising began late in his life. For most of his younger years, he was the kind of man who saw exercise as an unnecessary effort. He was content in his routines, never imagining that his body was slowly weakening.
First thing I'm here, I graduated, I'm in exercise. And they say, now, we are going to go into it. And when I say, I'm sorry, now, many feet are crying. Now, when I say, I told you, I'm going to be here, and I'm body in here, I'm here. I'm starting the same exercise. If I be here 1 week, then I will say, the body in I will continue. I'm going to say, I'm going to be here. And I'm going back, I say, yeah, guys, continue, yeah.
In his 70s, Mr. Ami here took his first jog. It wasn't graceful. He shuffled down the tarred road near his home with his heart pounding after just a few steps. Neighbors stared, perplexed by the sight of a man his age trying to stay fit. But Samuel pressed on. With time, the fatigue that once plagued him began to fade.
Just sorry, bare 4:30.
4:30. Now, be that 9:30. And the film beer me be at 9:30. Air for new food. The tavern was same for that. By 4:30, I'm sorry.
Now, exercise, you live here 15 years, you know. What you say, what problem do you have to say, be man?
Oh. Say, bed down, be a body, be a rabbit. Say, the party will want to wear, but say, you are a man, you are a danger. Say, when you are married, you are a few babies, and I say, you are a ticket, you are
his body, initially reluctant, began to embrace the routine. Soon, what began as an act of survival became his greatest joy.
It will continue, say, me, sir, exercise. Almost, I have 15 years. said it's 365 days, you know, for a year. Every day, you know, move as a temple to be a man.
Wow.
Every day, be a man.
Samuel's fitness journey has taught him profound lessons about resilience, purpose, and gratitude. Despite his age, he remains remarkably healthy. He intends to continue keeping fit until his last breath.
Well, exercise is good, and I guess even at his age, if he's still exercising, then you really don't have any excuse. Now, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Regional Integration has upgraded Ghana biometric passport into a chip-embedded document. This means that prospective applicants will receive new travel documents that will work as an e-passport, which usually contains an electronic chip that holds the same information that is printed on the passport data page. Government explains that the move is in line with the directive from the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, which will make the travel document recognized worldwide.
A prototype of the new chip-embedded Ghanaian passport. This sample of the booklet, being showcased by President Akufo-Addo today, will become the new travel document, an upgrade from the previous biometric booklets. According to Ghana's Minister for Foreign Affairs and Regional Integration, Shirley Ayokopoche, the chip-embedded passport will position the country against identity theft, document tampering, and unauthorized access.
Pursuant to the provisions of Paragraph 1 of the Passports and Travel Certificates Act, 1967, NLCD 155, my ministry started the chip-embedded passport project 8 years ago. Through a build, operate, and transfer BOT arrangement, this ministry partnered with Biometric Travel Solutions Limited, a private Ghanaian firm, to undertake this project, which is aimed at bringing our passports into strict compliance with the International Civil Aviation Organization's regulations. I'm confident that the introduction of this state-of-the-art chip-embedded passport positions us against identity theft, document tampering, and unauthorized access. The migration from the current biometric passports onto this new chip-embedded passport would be undertaken progressively and is expected to be fully operational before the end of the year. So sometime this month, the chip-embedded passports will be available to all Ghanaians.
Ghana's President Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo also believes the passport pledges to protect the identity and dignity of every Ghanaian.
Today with the e-passport, we take a giant step forward. This is not just about catching up with the rest of the world. It is about leading with innovation, putting Ghana on the path as a nation, on the map as a nation committed to excellence, and making life easier for every Ghanaian. The launch of the chip-embedded Ghana passport is not the end of a journey. It is the beginning of a new chapter. It symbolizes our aspiration for a modern, inclusive, and globally respected Ghana.
Pursuant to the provisions of Paragraph 1 of the Passports and Travel Certificates Act 1967, the chip-embedded passports initiated in 2016 will be rolled out through a build, operate, and transfer arrangement, bringing the country's passports into strict compliance with the International Civil Aviation Organization's regulations. Blessed Ogun's report for Joy News, Accra International Conference Center.
Well, to other stories now, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Health Insurance Authority, Dr. Dacosta Awaje, is recommending investment in local research for the manufacturing of dialysis equipment. This has become imperative in retooling dialysis units of major hospitals selected for the full implementation of the free dialysis program that started on December 1. Dr. Awaje visited students of the Bwasi Secondary Technical School to witness a dialysis machine prototype built by the students. Danae Aljima has more in the story.
The NHIA has announced 20 health facilities that will provide free dialysis treatment across the country starting this December. The initiative is being rolled out fully after a successful pilot program since June this year. CEO of the NHIA, Dr. Da Costa Boaje, has identified inadequate dialysis machines among challenges in the implementation of the program.
We received a letter from Konfuanoche that they needed more dialysis machines. We received it from Efia Kwanta. We received it from a police hospital. So what we did was we made an appeal to World Bank to see what we can do. And World Bank said that under our P4R, we can use some of the funds to purchase dialysis machines. So we applied, we went through the process and applied to the Public Procurement Authority.
In a move to deal with the cost involved in securing a dialysis machine, some students of the Obuasi Senior High Technical School have developed a prototype solar-powered dialysis machine. This innovative project was built with locally sourced materials with sensors integrated for the measurement of a patient's vitals. With the energy from solar, the machine is built to operate even in the absence of electricity. Team lead Sewabna Nkansa Echampon believes with the needed investments, the machine can be fully developed for clinical use.
It has not been fully developed, so if they should go under several series of equipment, it can actually be used. So right now, we're proving that it can actually be used if we put in the right resources and materials.
Meanwhile, the CEO of the National Health Insurance Authority is impressed by the initiative advocating funding to improve the prototype.
As a government official, I will definitely send the feedback to government, then we see how best we can support. The fact is, where I lived in the UK, and in the UK, when we see people doing certain things, we support. So organizations coming to support. And with digital innovations and vice presidents obviously focusing on the fourth industrial revolution, then it means that this is the thing that we must be looking at.
The NHIA CEO made a personal donation to the project. For Joy News, Namaya Ojima reporting.
Well, that's our show for today. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. Sharing food in voting queue is corruption and an integrity breach. That's according to Straj. Police investigate attack on a Santa Henes convoy in Techiman. Attorney General urged African nations to strengthen legal system to prevent ICC intervention. Of course, this story that we've been running, it will cost $5 million per kilometer to replace stolen bars on a Chimotansan railway. And we've got an exclusive story for you on myjoyonline.com. Folks, that's our show for today. Same time tomorrow, we shall be here with another exciting edition of The Pulse. Until then, take care. My name is Elton Roby, whatever you